For the book review, a new voice in the thriller genre, and I hope he's a continuing voice in the thriller genre, because on the basis of his first book, Fire Watching, Russ Thomas is a writer to watch. It's set in the UK, and the central character is Detective Sergeant Adam Tyler, and he is the only representative of the Cold Case Review Unit in a reasonably bucolic part of the UK, of England. And the reason that he's been sort of shifted sideways to the Cold Case Review Unit is because he once decked a senior officer. And the reason he decked a senior officer was because the officer was constantly ragging him about his homosexuality, and eventually got to the point where he wasn't prepared to take it anymore and dealt out a swift, sudden fisticuffs revenge. And yeah, okay, fair enough. He shouldn't have been treated in that way, but you can't have junior officers punching senior officers, so he's sent to the Cold Case Review Unit, and he's put on to a case when a body is found bricked into the walls of a house, and it is clear from the forensic work that he was buried alive. He was trying to claw his way out before he died. He's linked to a missing persons case, and that's why Detective Sergeant Adam Tyler is called in. And he thinks, well, I can use this case to fix my career. But then he discovers that he has a connection to the case that could compromise his career. He's had a one-night stand with one of the central figures in the case who could even be a suspect in the case. And so he has to negotiate that. He has to negotiate being made to work now with somebody who is in the regular part of the detective services, who knows about his homosexuality, knows about his fall from grace with a one-night stand, and rags him unmercifully about that, but for some reason doesn't want to shop him to higher authority. And there is a theme of arson throughout all of this. There is a painting about a man watching a fire, a painting called The Fire Watcher, and its location and its history, and the fact that fires are being set day after day after day as the investigation proceeds, makes him believe that there is a link between this painting and what is happening, and that the clue to finding out what is happening now and who's responsible for the murder is to understand who put that painting there and why. It's really good stuff. It's very complete for a first novel. It's called Fire Watching by Russ Thomas. And eventually, I plucked up my courage, did a bit of work with dumbbells first, and picked up the 900 pages of Hilary Mantel's The Mirror and the Light, the third in a trilogy which started in 2009 with Wolf Hall. Well, it started in 2008 with Wolf Hall. 2011 was Bring Up the Bodies, and now 2020, it is The Mirror and the Light, the final book in her Cromwell trilogy. She won the Booker Prize in 2009 for Wolf Hall. For the first time ever, somebody won for a sequel, when she won again in 2012 for Bring Up the Bodies. And you'd struggle to find decent odds against her winning the Booker Prize for a third time. Unprecedented. Three books in a trilogy, each being awarded with a Booker Prize. It starts where Bring Up the Bodies finished, when the French executioner in May 1536 strikes off Anne Boleyn's head with his sword. And Cromwell, and it is the Thomas Cromwell that he's channeling through these three books, telling the story of Tudor England through the viewpoint of Thomas Cromwell. He really is impressed by the sword. It's incised with the words of a prayer: Speculum Justitiae Ora Pro Nobis, Mirror of Justice, pray for us. There are lots of references to mirror and light throughout the book. The title comes from an exchange between Cromwell and Henry VIII. Your Majesty is the only prince, the mirror and the light of other kings. Henry repeats the phrase as if cherishing it, the mirror and the light. And certainly in the first third of the book, a lot of the characters are questioning about whether Anne and the men executed for adultery with her received justice. King Henry himself wonders that. Henry says, "Did I do right?" Right. The magnitude of the question checks him like a hand on his arm. And then we go through the next 3 years of Tudor history. And this is one of the extraordinary gifts that Mantell brings. We know how the story ends. I mean, anybody with any grasp of English history, and that's most people who did history up until about 20 years ago in South Africa, the likely readers of this book, know what happened to Cromwell. But she makes us believe, not only in this book, but in all three books, that there might be another end waiting. She said in an interview, "You succeed not despite the fact that your reader knows what happens, but because of it." So we're with Cromwell. Cromwell's telling us the story. We know what's waiting him. We want to warn him, but we can't. In the beginning, I struggled a bit with the absence of Anne Boleyn because she was such a marvelous character in the previous book. She was fierce and she was witty and she was sexy. So it's one struggles a bit in the beginning. And the following queens, Jane Seymour and so on, are not as interesting. But the history remains as interesting. The writing remains as interesting. And I'm reminded of the first page of Wolf Hall. 15-year-old Thomas is bleeding on the cobblestones of Putney. His father's kicking him and shouting, "So now get up!" We know that at the end, his head is going to rest on the executioner's block. It's brilliant. It's too long. You know, 900 pages, did we need them? But on every page, there is writing of coruscating brilliance. And the way she absorbs these critical years in English history, years which still inform many of the ideas that the English have of themselves, and the way she makes that palatable to the lay reader, it is truly an extraordinary piece of writing. Another extraordinary piece of writing is the non-fiction book, Know My Name by Chanel Miller. And it's a relatively well-known story. Emily Doe is the way the story was known. And it became widely known when Emily Doe, in 2016, wrote a letter, which was published on BuzzFeed, 7,000 words, addressed to her attacker. Familiar story. She was a student at a university. She was assaulted at a party. And then she had to try and work through the system and get her attacker arrested and convicted. And he was an Olympic swimming hopeful. And she was, you know, throughout this process, she writes at one point, he kept being referred to as an Olympic hopeful. And she was constantly referred to as a woman who conceded that she'd had 5 blackouts from alcohol before. And it's that terribly, terribly familiar tale of women struggling to be believed when they've been assaulted by a man. She wrote that letter to her attacker, and she read it aloud at his sentencing. Some of you might remember this. It was published on BuzzFeed, and it's had subsequently over 30 million views. And that letter has been a significant part of the fight against this kind of campus violence and violence against women generally in the U.S. And the opening line of that letter, you might remember it, "You don't know me, but you've been inside me. And that's why we are here today." And what she does now, 4 years later, well, the book was published late last year, is she says, "Know my name. My name is Chanel Miller." And so she tells us more about herself and then looks back on the process between being raped and publishing that letter, and then goes beyond that and writes about her period of recovery. And she finishes by writing about the Me Too movement and its moments, the Harvey Weinstein revelations, the U.S. gymnastics case, the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, and so on. It's an extraordinary book. It really, really is. She has this dazzling presence. "This terrible thing has happened to me. But here I am. You cannot and will not diminish me any longer. Know my name," she says. It's unbelievably powerful. Know My Name by Chanel Miller. And that's Chanel as in Coca, Chanel, C-H-A-N-E-L, single N.